that's something else that's very unique about our process, is that we don't fix anybody. Everybody that comes here fixes themselves, and that's why they're able to get the outcomes that they're able to get, because we put them in the driver's seat.
Welcome back to another episode of the Performance Rehab Authority Podcast. I'm Dr. Caitlin.
I'm Dr. Raj.
And if this is your first time joining us, Roger and I own Move Athletics, and that's located in Western Mass. So we specialize in helping active adults and athletes get out of pain, back to doing the things that they love, no matter who told them that they couldn't do it. And we help them do it even when they've tried everything else.
Yeah, that's kind of our reputation, is that we can help. When nowhere else can, Move Athletics can. And that's what has brought us to, you know, even doing this podcast, is that we're on a mission to help the profession as a whole level up, right? There's a huge gap in clinical skill set and being able to understand and make sense of things that come in the door. So today we want to break down our process for you guys a bit so you can know, you know, uniquely kind of like what we do and how we're able to get these results for our clients. So hopefully you can take something away and start implementing it yourself and getting better results immediately.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. So when somebody walks through the door, it starts with, one, having an idea of what's going on. So we do a 20-minute phone call before each and every patient comes in so that we have an idea of what's going on and why it's important to them, because you have to know what makes it valuable to the patient if you're going to solve their problem. And then we bring them back and we start off with a subjective exam where we're really good listeners. You want to dive in on that?
I want to take a step back too real quick, because it's kind of a funny story. But it relates to like their whys, right? Because you never really know what is bringing the person in. If they're here for knee pain, and this is a true story, by the way, if they're here for knee pain and you just help them with their knee pain, like, okay, cool. But what's the deeper why? When you have that conversation, you can find out, well, because I want to get back to running, right? That's a little bit deeper. And then you continue the conversation and you're not just going, yeah, but why? Like Olaf or a five-year-old, right? You're having the conversation. It's like, okay, well, find out what makes running important to them. And it's like, well, I want to lose 20 pounds. Like, oh, okay. Well, now we're getting somewhere, but I need to know, like, why is that important to you? And then you find out they're like, well, I'm really unhappy in my marriage and I want to feel sexy again so I can leave my husband. And that's really what's bringing this person in here. It's not really the knee pain. It's that the knee pain is preventing them from losing the weight to feel confident to change their whole life situation. And then you can design a program for them that actually helps them accomplish that goal of losing the weight and building their confidence in themselves while having the benefit of getting rid of their knee pain. It just think that's an interesting story. Totally true. Caught me off guard when I had that level of honesty the first time. But if you don't have these conversations, you don't build these relationships, like, then the whole outcome changes, right? So it really does start with building that relationship very early on. Yeah, so then when you get into your subjective exam, you need a baseline level of knowledge and honestly experience to know what patterns make sense for a specific body part and what patterns don't make sense for that specific body part. And that's where like having a mentor comes in really handy, is that you get to borrow other people's experience and shortcut the process instead of having to listen to a story a bajillion times and treat 100,000 patients to narrow it down. You know, so if somebody comes in and they have knee pain, for example, and they describe their knee pain as burning, well, that should be a little bit of a yellow light of like, maybe that's a nervy thing, because we know that people describe nerve pain often as burning. It's like, yeah, I get this pain in the front of my knee, but it's when I'm sitting with my legs out straight. Well, that also is like another yellow flag of like, okay. And you start listening to their patterns, their mechanism of injury, if there is one, and the patterns of in which their pain behaves, in the other things that they kind of offhandedly say, like, at the end of a long day, both my hamstrings are just super tight and I feel like I have to stretch them all the time.
Yeah, it ends up being listening for key words or key phrases that you know don't make sense. So like Roger's patient yesterday, who has to stretch all the time, or it's like, oh, well, I stretch after work, but I know I should be stretching before work just because of all this hamstring tightness that I'm feeling when I'm just standing. And it's like, okay, that doesn't really make sense. So those are going to turn into buzzwords for you that you can filter out the other unimportant stuff, but those give you those indicators to go down certain routes.
Yeah. Also, when you look at her range of motion and she's over 6 feet tall and can flat palm the floor, like maybe you don't have a hamstring issue there or a lumbar flexion issue, or either way, having that background level of knowledge, background baseline level of knowledge to be able to pick up on these things that don't quite match up. And knowing, like, all right, well, if she has, you know, or if this person has kneecap pain, like patellofemoral pain, this is how it would behave. This is what we would expect. And they're telling me it hurts here and this, you know, when they do, whether they go up and down stairs or if they're sitting for a long period of time, and picking up on things that make sense, don't make sense. And then being able to match that up with the testing if it doesn't line up very well, because if it doesn't make sense, then you're probably evaluating the wrong thing. So once you have the differential list in your head from the subjective of like, okay, so I know I need to thoroughly clear the back, I need to check out the knee, or nothing in here says that I need to look outside of the knee, but I am curious, this sounds like it might be a little bit intra-articular, but there's also some things in there that say, you know, maybe it's patellofemoral, or insert whatever diagnosis, differentials here. Knowing how to regionalize things. So if we think it's the knee, like it's the knee region, then we can just evaluate that, right? But if we're saying maybe it's a hip, maybe it's a knee, we need to be able to know, how do I rule in or rule out the hip, rule in or rule out the back, to know exactly where to take the objective.
Yeah, and I think that hits a key point, is that you have to have a differential list, because nothing is clear cut, even if you think it is. You're gonna back yourself into a corner if you think, hey, this is a crystal clear, this is the one thing that this person's coming in and I'm gonna look at and this is what we're gonna do. You need to rule in and rule out and use your tests to actually take yourself down those routes.
Yeah, those are some of the times that when it seems the most obvious, those are the patients that don't get better. We're going to do an episode. We can do a whole episode on a case study about that. We'll save it. Actually, we'll do a whole episode on it. But those are the times where it's very clearly one thing. People don't get better because it's actually not that one thing, and it's just very hidden. Yeah. Right? Because people didn't do testing well.
We just like to make assumptions and put people in a box to make the process go faster, and do not do that.
Yeah. So then, you know, once you have regionalized it, then you can get into really assessing that body part very thoroughly. But you need to have a system of evaluation and treatment. You need to have an algorithm to follow, so that way you make sure that you're getting all of the information that you need in an organized manner, so you can then make sense of it. Once you have done your objective information or your objective examination, you should have all of the information about the impairments that you need to treat as it relates to that thing. That includes the contributing factors above stream, like above and below the area. You know, if you actually have a knee issue, like what's going on at the hip and the ankle? Because there's probably something that's playing into it. If you have a lumbar spine issue, is there something going on at the hip and the thoracic spine? There's a pattern of this all the time. But then you need to be able to take that and relate the impairments that you found to their goals, to be able to develop a rehab plan that makes sense for that person and is important to that person. You know?
Yeah, so go back to their why. Remember what makes this valuable to them. And then as you're starting to address all the impairments, as you're starting to address all of their, anything that's keeping them in pain, you have to provide step-by-step interventions that are going to get them inches and inches and inches closer to that goal. So if you have somebody who really wants to squat, and you don't check above and below, but you know that it's a lumbar spine issue, but say they have a thoracic spine mobility problem, or they have ankle dorsiflexion restriction, then when they go down to the squat and they start rounding forward and compensating, then that's going to load their spine more. So you need to also be considering, what is their exercise routine that they're doing outside of rehab, and is there anything that they're doing that's going to be pissing it off based on their other limitations?
Yeah, absolutely. And then just making sure that the interventions that you pick are specific to them, right? And the activities that are important to them. If somebody wants to get back to squatting, we should probably have squatting-based activities, right? It doesn't make much sense to have them sitting there doing just open kinetic, closed kinetic chain, knee extension and flexion and clamshells. Like, we need to be looking at weight-bearing things, especially if they want to get back to weighted squatting, Olympic weightlifting, like barbell back squatting, those kinds of things. Like, we have to keep those movement patterns specific to that. And if we can keep them squatting but alter the way that they're moving, modify the movement to allow them to keep doing it, that's going to feel really, really good for them. And it's going to help them mentally and physically. And then over time, you know, if it's a knee thing and you can get them doing a low bar squat instead of a high bar squat, so it's more hip dominant, and then over time we can progress them back over to a knee dominant squat, maybe even with their heels elevated so their knees are super far forward and loading the hell out of that thing, like, boom. That sounds like a solid plan, and they're going to love it because they like to squat, and it's what's important to them. It's what they want to get back to. If you go back to the example earlier of, you know, the person that wanted to lose 20 pounds, like, then you can also program in there for them, like, hey, let's add in this amount of XYZ, for example, walking, right? Because what? Most underrated exercise for body composition changes is walking, right? Like, let's add in 30 minutes of walking every day. Doesn't hurt your knee, helps burn the calories. You can dig into their nutrition, their hydration, the rest of their habits, and really blow this person's expectations out of the water and get them a really good result. And that's one of the things that's unique about what we do, is that we actually dive into those things with our patients. We're looking at the stress and the stress management and the sleep and the hydration and the nutrition. We also have a very unique skill set of being able to pick up on all of these little cues that other people don't pick up on. Like, 99% of physical therapists don't pick up on a lot of the things that we're talking about. That
as far as the what we do that's unique, so we've already said, hey, we do a really good job at listening, but then the algorithm that we follow really simplifies the journey. Like, we don't get pulled off track, we stay the course, and we make it relevant for the patient. So again, cross-referencing the information that we find with their goal and checking in on that throughout rehab to make sure that it's still relevant, that their goals haven't changed. But I think even going back to day one, once we figure out what's going on, we focus on educating the patient more heavily than any other clinic I've ever been a part of.
That's for sure.
Yeah. I think that's the thing that surprises people when they come in here and they leave with all this education. But I think that's the most valuable thing, because now they can apply all of this 24 hours a day outside of rehab instead of just getting like an exercise or two that they're going to do 3 times a week.
Yeah. Listen, if you work with an active population, exercise is easy for them, right? Like, they like to exercise. A lot of them, the people we see, they love to exercise. A lot of them have pain with exercise. And if just random exercise was the answer, like, they've usually already tried it and it would be easy for them. But what's a lot more difficult is getting them to understand the things that they're doing that are keeping themselves in pain. What's a lot more empowering, right, is giving them the information to be able to take care of themselves and not having to rely on you as a provider to, quote, fix them. That also creates a really frustrating situation for the patient and the therapist when the patient's not doing better, but the patient hasn't been put in the driver's seat. That's something else that's very unique about our process, is that we don't fix anybody. Everybody that comes here fixes themselves, and that's why they're able to get the outcomes that they're able to get, because we put them in the driver's seat. We don't actually take responsibility for getting them better. That sounds crazy, I know. But we give them the responsibility of getting themselves better. We will very clearly have conversations with people when we give them advice and they don't take it. Well, Sarah, you know, I understand that's uncomfortable, or that's not the way that you want to do it, or XYZ excuse here. But in the end, the choice is yours, right? Like, you can choose to take the advice and to get better, or you can choose not to take the advice and choose pain, right? And if you choose to be in pain, like, then I can't help you. And they're like, oh, that makes so much sense, because people don't want to make change. They're stubborn. It's hard. It's inconvenient. It takes longer. It's not the exercise they want to do. But when you put it black and white like that, of like, hey, listen, I can give you exercises, I can give you advice, but it's up to you to take the advice. And if you choose to not listen, then you're choosing to be in pain. At that point, I can't help you at all. Like, that puts 100% of the ownership on them and really reframes things. And then people understand that they need to be active in their own savior, right? Like, no one's coming to save them. They need to do it themselves. Everybody loves to go somewhere to have like a quick fix. That's why people like going to a chiropractor. They like getting dry needling. They want to take a pill. They want to pay somebody to have to do no work. But unfortunately, that's just not the way real life works. That's the way real rehab works. And we need to reframe them and tell them, like, nope, this is not on us. This is on you. We're going to help you along. We're going to give you all the tools. But in the end, it's the effort that you put in that's going to get the outcome.
And then once they are fully empowered and in control of what they're doing, at that point, we also see that their symptoms start becoming less irritable. We increase the amount of movement that we're actually doing based on their goals. So this isn't going to be on some table where we spend the entire plan doing basic level shit.
Like, absolutely not.
We're gonna get them with a barbell. We're gonna put them on the treadmill. We're gonna do things that get them out of breath. Work on progressive strength training and overloading the muscles. So we're not just going to be doing some random shit that doesn't make sense, that doesn't make sense to the patient. We make it make sense, and then we push.
Yeah. And so there's a little phase in the middle where we're working on like slow movements, quality mechanics, and we're making sure that they're moving well. And then once they demonstrate mastery over the functional or foundational movement patterns that we need them to be moving in, whether it's, you know, squat, lunge, push, pull, hinge, carrying things, whatever's specific to them, but these functional compound movements that you do in everyday life, then yeah, we're going to load them up and we're going to use sound strength training principles. All too often you go to see a PT, or a patient goes to see a PT, and it's 3 sets of 10. Do 3 sets of 10 of all these different exercises. They're not challenged, they're not pushed, they're not fatigued, they're not in that muscle burning from the fatigue, they're not struggling, and that's not going to cut it. If you're going to the gym and you want to get stronger, what are you going to do? You'll lift heavy shit, right? So why do people think in rehab they're not lifting heavy shit? Like, rehab is training is rehab. It's the same thing. So we need to be progressively overloading our patients, not switching their exercise program and what they're doing every week when they come in. No strength training program that gets results is like, all right, 1 week you're going to do this set of exercises, the next you're going to do a completely different set, the next you're going to do a completely different set. They work in blocks where it's progressively overloaded, and then they don't completely change the stimulus. Maybe they modify one or two things for that next block, or if it's still a variation of the same thing, maybe it's progressed to a harder level or whatever, but it's progressive overloading in consistency that is also unique to us, which shouldn't be. That's like just strength training 101.
Yeah, I think so. Even if they're not ready to load the muscle yet, like, you realize that if you just get them out of breath and increase their heart rate, now you're placing more strain on their body, and so they can do it in a way that's harder without actually loading the muscle more, which is going to be essential for part of their rehab. So I think knowing little pearls like that to have them working under the demands of like fatigue or pre-fatigue is going to make your interventions smarter and better.
Yeah, especially if they have their pain when they're under fatigue later on, if it's been a long time. You know, if somebody has pain with running, but it's only after 3 miles of running, well, you could have them run 3 miles before they come in and then get to work. Or you could shortcut the process for them if they don't have time to do that and jack up the heart rate, do these things that are going to get them in that state, and then train there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are several reasons why our methods get better results, right? One, they make sense. They follow sound strength training principles, and everything is thought out from the very beginning.
We preframe exactly what rehab's going to look like month over month.
Yeah, we explain it to them. We break it down of like, this is exactly what our process is going to look like. We match it to their goals. We make sure that they think that it's useful. And then we actually check in on their goals along the way, which is, again, shouldn't be unique to us, but it is. And you can think, I check in their goals along the way. And I don't mean check in along how they think they're doing towards their goals. I mean making sure that their goals are still their goals, right? I can't tell you the number of times where people have changed their goals midway through rehab. And if I wasn't asking, hey, is this what we're still working towards? Then I wouldn't know that they no longer care about running. And if they come in and you develop your whole plan around running, and then halfway through they decide, actually, I'm not going to get back to running. I just want to lift, or I just want to do this thing, or whatever it is. And you don't change your plan to match what their actual goals are, like, again, they're not gonna meet their expectations, and they're never gonna thrive and be really happy.
Yeah, you have to constantly check in and ask them what they think is missing from getting them back to whatever outcome they want, even if the outcome changes. I mean, they're gonna guide you to guide them to what they need.
Yeah, I mean, it's this simple, right? Hey, if zero is when we first met or when this injury first happened and 100% is back to normal, where would you say you are along that process? And they'll say X percent. And then you'll just say, all right, cool. What's the missing, you know, X percent? How do we get you that? And then they will tell you, well, I want to be able to do this, this, and this, or I still have trouble with this, this, and this. And what's really cool is, like, in that process, a lot of times they surprise you. If you're frustrated and you're like, God, we're not anywhere we need to be, and you think they're going to say like 40%, and they're like, I don't know, 85%. And I'm like, shit, I'm doing pretty good. What's the missing 15%? And you're like, oh, okay, that's easy. We can do that. Let's do that today, right? And then you'll be at 100%, and then we can continue to exceed expectations and get you better than 100%, which is where they got injured.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I hope this gives you an idea of, I mean, the Move Athletics process is unique to us, but a lot of these components should not be. We're just doing our due diligence, as you should do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you guys want a little bit more insight into the way that we operate, and you know, how we think and how we do things, we do have a totally free 3-week mini course training for you guys. You can dig in and immediately take what you're learning and apply it to your caseload in a way that makes sense.
It is moveathleticseducation.com/free, or you can just click the button in the description box. If you're not already following us, be sure to like, subscribe to our channel, and send it to someone who would benefit from listening.
Yeah, if you guys are on YouTube, just hit the subscribe button. Helps more people find us. And then, yeah, share this on your Instagram story so your friends can see it too, and they can learn, and we can level up together.
Remember, if you're unhappy or unfulfilled in your life or in your career, no one is coming to save you. It is your responsibility to lead by example, to pursue excellence, to learn new skills.
And welcome to the challenge of raising the bar, right? Drive the change that you want to see.